On the 25th day of Kislev, the days of Hanukkah are eight. One may not eulogize on them, and one may not fast on them. What is the reason? When the Greeks entered the sanctuary, they defiled all the oils that were in the sanctuary by touching them. And when the Hasmonean monarchy overcame them and emerged victorious over them, they searched and found only one cruse of oil that was placed with the seal of the high priest, undisturbed by the Greeks. And there was sufficient oil there to light the candelabrum for only one day. A miracle occurred, and they lit the candelabrum from it for 8 days. And then a passage from the book of Luke in the Christian Bible. Mary gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloths and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. In that region, there were shepherds living in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. Then an angel of God stood before them, and the glory of God shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I am bringing you good news of great joy for all the people. To you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is the Messiah. There will be a sign for you. You will find a child wrapped in bands of cloths and lying in a manger." Those are my readings. Now we have another interlude. Thank you for that music. So today is the day when we would traditionally every year have our children's pageant, which I affectionately call the Loikar Tongsi Wali Krismahana Kwanzaa pageant, the celebration of light, where we celebrate eight different winter solstice holidays. I've been leading it for many years. The tradition came before me, and today I'm going to give you my director's commentary on how the pageant came to its current form and what it means to me. It's one of the most important days of the Unitarian year for me to celebrate a way in which many different world religions all celebrate something in common, each in their own unique and particular ways, each with their own history and culture, but many cultures around the world celebrate the winter solstice in some way. When I organized the script, we put together eight different holidays, and in deciding what order to put them in, I decided to go with the one that has been around the longest first, and then proceed from oldest holidays to newest holidays. When I took over, there were just four holidays in the pageant: solstice, Hanukkah, Christmas, and Kwanzaa, and those seemed pretty America and Europe-centric, so I added in the Hindu festival of Diwali and the Native American story of raven stealing the sun, and some other Asian holidays as well. So Diwali, the Hindu festival of lights, which I read a little bit about, is celebrated across India. There are many stories. The one we tell in our pageant is the story of Naragasura stealing the sun. Aditi, the goddess of the sun, wears earrings, which are the light of the sun. Every day she puts them on, walks across the sky, and then when she goes to bed, she takes them off and puts them away, and the sun goes down. Naragasura steals the earrings, and the mother goddess Durga goes and retrieves them. And this is the story we tell in our pageant. Traditionally in Diwali, Diwali takes place over several days. And one of the celebrations, one of the ceremonies, is to reenact the god Krishna, who's a witness to all these events, washing off all of the blood. When Naragasura was killed, the blood got all over Krishna, and so then he had to wash it off, and we reenact that. I left that part out of our pageant. It just didn't seem like what we wanted our children to be doing. And you will find in a couple of other of these stories, there's been some violence censored out of the story. Hi, Shane. I'm telling lots of stories. Please go back to your movie.
There's 40 people.
I can tell you all of these stories later. Diwali, Hinduism is a religion of many gods and goddesses and many traditions. India is a country of over a billion people with lots of many cultures within it. So that story is one of several stories celebrated during Diwali. Even during our celebration, we also tell the story of Lakshmi, the goddess of wealth, where your house is swept clean and a path is swept clear to welcome wealth and good fortune into your home. The next story in our pageant is always Raven, a Native American tradition, a story told from this region. There are many beautiful books with illustrations in the tradition of the Haida people who traditionally lived just north of here in the what's now the Seattle and British Columbia areas. The world was dark, but there was a light in the Sky Chief's house up in the sky. Raven went near the house and saw the light was coming, went near the house and turned himself into a feather and dropped into the water. And the Sky Chief's daughter dipped her basket into the water to collect water, took a drink and swallowed the feather. And a little while later had a baby who was secretly Raven. In the house, Raven would cry and cry and pointed and pointed at the box with the light inside of it. Finally, Sky Chief threw up his hands and said, "Give the child the box." Raven opened the box, took out the sun, turned back into a bird, and flew out of the house and put the sun in the sky for all creatures to enjoy the warmth and light of the sun. The next story is Solstice, the traditional European pagan story of Solstice. For many years, we celebrated Solstice with extremely scratchy hats on our children and talking about the earth, the water, the air, and the fire, the four traditional pagan four corners, the four elements. A couple years ago, I realized that all the other holidays had a story with characters in it. And so we recently added the story of every year at winter, the sun is old and tired. In summer, the sun rose high in the sky and brought warmth to the earth. But now in the heart of winter, the sun is old and weak and barely makes it up into the sky each day. On the solstice, Mother Night calls to the sun, asking him to come rest in her arms. The sun goes to her and Night wraps her arms around him. The world becomes dark for a very long night. The children of earth ask why it's so long, and Mother Night says, "Sing a song for the sun, and the light will return in the morning." And we sing, "The air, the earth, the water, the fire, return, return, return. The air, the earth, the water, the fire, return, return, return." In the night, as the children sang, the sun becomes young again, and in the morning he's reborn from Mother Night. Like a baby at first, the sun crawls low across the sky, but in time he climbs higher and higher. Everyone cheers, and the children jump up and down. And that is the story of Solstice that we tell every year. We then tell the story of the Chinese festival of Dongji. I haven't found a story with characters yet to tell about this festival in the Chinese tradition. It's a very minor festival. Chinese New Year, which comes in a little while longer, is a much more important festival in China. But I wanted to honor the fact that the winter solstice is celebrated in the Chinese tradition, as with many other traditions around the world. Some cultures give the winter solstice great importance. Some acknowledge it, but give other things more importance. The next, load the whole script, please, computer. No. I can never remember all the festivals. I believe Hanukkah is next, but technical difficulties. Why didn't I read the whole document first? Come on. So if I'm right that Hanukkah is next, Hanukkah is the Jewish Festival of Lights, which happens on the 25th day of Kislev. Today is the third day of Hanukkah. Tonight will be the fourth night of Hanukkah, during which a menorah is lit. This is another festival where the full story involves lots of battles and killing and fighting between two different armies as the Greeks took over the Jewish temple, and then the Jewish army drove them out and defeated them. In the first early years, before I was a part of Y'East, our pageant included a battle scene where the Jewish army would drive the Greeks from the temple. But that too easily got out of control and was not conducive to a spiritual worship. And so that particular scene was removed from our pageant before I was even involved. Come on, show me. I see someone in chat has mentioned they would love a copy of the Winter Solstice story. I would be happy to share it somewhere. That story I adapted from a book called Circle Round, which is a book of pagan stories for all of the different pagan holidays around the year. I believe Starhawk is one of the co-authors of that book. What else can I say about Hanukkah? Is there, whoops. Come on, computer. What else can I say? I think. If I'm remembering correctly. The next story in our list might be Christmas, but I sure would love to remember that for sure. Someone's posted a link to Circle Round in the chat. Awesome. Thank you. It's a good book. All right. So if I'm right that Christmas, do I have, there we go. I have the whole thing. Yes. Hanukkah was next after solstice, fighting swords. Christmas is indeed the next holiday. So Christmas is fairly famous and well-known and celebrated widely in this country. The religious tradition is the celebration of the birth of Jesus. In the Christian Bible, there are two separate stories of Christmas. Visited by kings, wise men from the east, and then the story of the king of the land killing all of the baby boys. The historical record tells us this second story is an allegory. This story did not happen. As far as we know, Jesus being poor as a child is entirely possible, but the story of the wise men is an allegory, which everyone at the time would have understood as an allegory to say, remember the story of Moses, the great Jewish leader of antiquity. He was the leader of the Jewish people when the king of the land killed all of the babies. And we do know from history, there are independent documents outside of scripture indicating that the Egyptians did kill Jewish baby boys. That did happen. The story of this happening around Jesus's time is an allegory to tell his contemporaries, this man is a great leader, as great as Moses. It was not meant to be understood literally at the time. So when taking four holidays and cramming four other holidays into our pageant, I decided to take the wise men out. Many Christian churches, when they do a pageant, will lump the two together. They'll do the shepherds and they'll do the wise men. I needed time. And so I removed the wise men, who didn't really happen anyway. Not that any of these religious stories are necessarily literal truth. And with that cynical information about the Christmas story, it is now time for our friend and member Deborah to share her perspective on Christmas with her family and her life.
Thank you. I volunteered to talk about my past experiences with Christmas. Were there even other holiday traditions if I didn't know about them as a child? I want to acknowledge that my past Christmases were clearly of a privileged white girl, then and now an adult with even more middle class privilege than my parents had. They're my memories only, for better or worse. I grew up on a small farm. My parents had me when they were 20, so I was lucky enough to grow up in very close proximity to both sets of grandparents and a great-grandmother, all of whom I adored and adored me. Christmas was always a magical and wonderful family time. On Christmas Eve, our family of mom, dad, and two brothers eventually would go to the small town 11 miles away from our farmhouse where my maternal grandparents lived. We would have a wonderful homemade dinner and then share presents. Sometimes an aunt, a sister of my mother's, would come with their family to join us. Sometimes it would be just us. We have home movies of us around the tree opening our presents and being joyful and silly. It was a really great magical time. We would then pack up our presents and our used casserole dishes in a clothes basket and move on to the next set of grandparents. My paternal grandparents lived within a city block of us on the farm. They would have had their dinner already and be waiting for us with Christmassy snacks and their own tree and presents. It was another joyous round of presents and sweetness. During most of my childhood, our family was the only ones that were there with my grandparents, and I was the only granddaughter. Be still my heart. Later, there was an uncle with his own small children. After this celebration, we would walk home to our own house and go to bed. We knew Santa would come in the time that we were sleeping. In the morning, we all knew we had to stay in bed until my dad returned from the barn where he was milking the cows. When he got home, got cleaned up, and had his weak Norwegian coffee, we were allowed to come downstairs and see what Santa had brought for us. It was always very exciting to find out what he had delivered. In retrospect, I can remember some of the later Christmas celebrations at home and know that some of the presents were not just right, but can remember distinctly feeling and knowing that everyone had tried their best to get things that were right for the kids that were within their means. Just as I was later to find out, for example, that one of my grandmothers, who we always gleefully picked out a really fun and wonderful set of salt and pepper shakers because she collected them. Well, it turned out that she didn't really collect them. That was the kid's idea of what she should have. But that wasn't really the point. The point was to show the love and caring for someone by trying your best to get them what you thought they would want. It wasn't until I married my husband, John, that, and I began to celebrate Christmas here in Oregon, that I truly understood that not everyone had such good memories of past holidays and joy in celebrating. He had no desire to get together with his family who lived within close traveling distance. I just couldn't understand this as I was homesick and missing the joyous celebrations. As time went on, I began to understand and accept his family's history of the holidays. John's mother was unfortunately diagnosed with schizophrenia, had terrible treatments, was institutionalized frequently, and committed suicide all by the time he was in kindergarten. He, his father, and his six other siblings were, of course, very scarred and shaped by that. They each dealt with this trauma and loss in different ways. Some were more successful than others. There were basically no happy Christmas memories for him to draw on and pass on to our girls. I took on the job of shopping and planning once we had kids because he didn't really want to participate. He was often reluctant to get out of bed on Christmas, which over time I totally got and supported him in what he needed to make it through what was really a sad holiday for him. I know now that I made a mistake by trying to overcompensate with the kids, making sure that everything on their list was something they got, and making sure that the stockings were overflowing, because there weren't relatives at hand to make happy meals and memories. Of course, buying more expensive things would solve that. Sadly, that never seemed to cut it, and Christmas wasn't really a happy time filled with love and light. When the youngest daughter started to always keep an internal record of who got more things, what each one cost, who was loved more, I knew that things needed to change. We will stumble, but begin again in love. In the last 10 years or so, we have been much more successful in our celebrations. We have kept the focus on doing things together rather than the gifts. We like to go to movies together and eat Thai food with our Jewish friends. On Christmas Eve, we get together with a bunch of wild and crazy friends and eat lots of potluck food and play games and have a white gift exchange where it's not uncommon to be saddled with something really horrible and you wait till the next year to get rid of it at the next white Santa. Last year, our family went on a little holiday cruise on the Spirit of Portland on Christmas, and everyone, even John, said it was the best Christmas they have ever had. This year will be a come down for sure. Going for the drive-by delivery of some special Christmas snacks and presents that they need of things in their adult life. But we know that we love each other, and that is what is going to count in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. The next festival that we talk about after Christmas is Loy Krathong, a Thai festival. So many things. I have a picture here. In Thailand, people will make boats out of banana leaves and fruit and put candles on them and set them to float in the river in the evening as a way of apologizing to the river for all the pollution that has been made in the past and to atone for wrongs of the past year. Again, this is a fairly modern festival. I don't have stories to tell about characters, but in any book of winter festivals of lights, there will always be a page about Loy Krathong because it's a beautiful tradition. And then the final holiday which we celebrate in our pageant is Kwanzaa, the most recent and modern festival. Kwanzaa was created in 1966 by Milana Karanga, professor of Black Studies at the University of California. It is a festival of lights. Each night a candle is lit. And there are seven principles of Kwanzaa, and a different principle is discussed each night. And each year we light the candles and we say the names of the principles. And our member, Lana Quackenbush, is gonna share her story about Kwanzaa.
Lana, you're muted.
Thanks for that. Okay, so I'm gonna start by showing everyone a picture of my grandmother and explain that, like Anders said, Kwanzaa is a fairly recent holiday. And so in general, my family grew up celebrating Christmas and my favorite Christmas memories happen at my grandmother's house and my great-grandmother's house. But looking at what Kwanzaa is and how it slowly folded into my family, I recognize that the way that my grandmother put together her holiday is rooted in the same values that we talk about around Kwanzaa. So that first value of umoja and unity reminds me of how my family, despite being very diverse, has always come together at this time of year. Despite what's going on and despite anything that's happened in the previous year, we always knew that we were going to go to grandma's house and that there would be about 50 other people there. And she still, I think, is keeping with that tradition this year. You cannot keep her from people. So I pray for her safety. Kuji Chagulia, the quality of self-determination, is another strong value of my grandmother's. She's a very independent woman who's always lived life in her own way and encouraged all of her children to do whatever brought them joy, which is where that diversity in my family comes from. We're very much encouraged to be whoever it is that we are and accepted for that. And so I grew up among many races and orientations and transgendered family members before we had that word. And that didn't matter. You were family. And that comes from her acceptance and love and her Kuji Chagulia. The quality of Ujima and that collective work and responsibility also undergirded her holidays. She was the neighbor in her apartment building who would make 5 or 6 turkeys and share them out. And that could only happen when she rallied everyone around her to cook these giant meals. And my family would show up with presents, but not food, because there really wasn't any need in her house for anyone to bring food. It was always an incredible feast. And I don't know where it came from. It just came from grandma's hands and probably everyone around her with that Ujima quality. Ujamaa, that cooperative economics, is also something that makes me think of my grandmother. She's entrepreneurial, and she and so many of her children and grandchildren have that quality of making it on their own. And often when I speak to family members, there's something that they want me to invest in. My grandma has been working for years to build this inheritance that she, every holiday and birthday, talks about. You know, when her boat comes in, she's going to make sure every single one of us ends up rich. And that's something, that hope and the practices that she extends in those directions, I think, are one of the driving forces that has gotten her this far through life, that Ujamaa quality. The fifth day of Kwanzaa, Nia, purpose, is the word for my grandmother. She's just so driven, sense of what's right in the world, and that's so founded in love. And the holiday times are when that just comes pouring out of her, and she gathers everyone around her, and you can see that she's uplifted by this time of year and sharing everything that she puts together with her almost uncountable family members that still orbit around her. And Kumba, creativity. So I'm going to, this is my gift. And the way that Kwanzaa came up in my family was when I went away to college, I started making things by hand, mostly jewelry, but also, you know, knitting. And Christmas time is the time when I would get busy just making things for all of my family members. My dad instilled in me the tradition that everybody should get something. It almost doesn't matter what it is. He used to fill his pockets with quarters in case he hadn't got a gift for anyone in the family. He would just reach into his pocket and pull out a giant handful of quarters and just so that they would have something. And I kind of get that same energy that, like, I just have to have enough of anything to be generous with. And so I was making all of my gifts and bringing them to my grandmother's house. And she looked at me and she said, you know, we were talking and we decided that you're actually the only one who celebrates Kwanzaa, because I was doing this by hand and out of love and bringing those same qualities of community and unity And I felt really honored. And I took that as a blessing that my grandmother was in some way inspired, or just her being proud of me for embodying what she saw as Kwanzaa values and traditions. So the seventh day of Kwanzaa, the day of Imani, the day of faith. In my family, we probably have more religions than we share. So my grandmother, just before I was born, became a practicing Buddhist. And around the time that I was born, both of my parents were practicing Buddhism. And later on, you know, my family started going to a different church, and then a different church, and then a different church. And same thing with my other family members, because we're allowed to be who we are and accepted for who we are. We're all allowed our search. And yet at this time of year, we come together despite our differences. And I'm still on my journey, and I'm still walking in faith. And my grandmother and I still share that. And I'm just so grateful for her casting this wide umbrella every winter. And it's now part of my belief system. It doesn't really matter which story you're telling around this time of year. It's just that when the days get short and the nights are long, it's important that you tell a story. Thank you.
Thank you, Lana. So Kwanzaa is the final holiday in our pageant. Typically, we divide the kids up into groups. And so half the kids will be wearing Kwanzaa costumes, and the other kids will run in at this point with costumes from all the other holidays, and we'll sing This Little Light of Mine to end the pageant. We're going to wait and finish our regular worship structure and then sing This Little Light of Mine as our closing hymn today. But at this moment, I like to think of how every year the pageant, I may be the person that you see running around guiding the children, but it's always the work of many people working together. There's always several people helping the kids change clothes very quickly between holidays. There's always people working very hard to make beautiful music, and everyone helps sing the songs together. And lots of hands help make delicious food for us to eat afterwards. We don't have all of those pieces this year, but we definitely had lots of people help make the worship together. Today's worship, working together to make our slides that we see, and lots of people helped make music today. So as with all the other pageants, thank you to everyone who helped make this holiday happen once again. And now Ruth will take us for the rest of today's worship.